This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Julian Ng and Wong Xiaoning. It's 6 o'clock on Wednesday, the 17th of July. Good morning, guys. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning. It's hump day, isn't it? We're halfway through.
We're halfway through. And incidentally, did you know that there is an eclipse this morning?
Yes, one of our producers pointed it out to us, actually.
Really?
And yeah, the moon, I mean, it looks like it's so close you could touch it.
Did you manage to see it?
Yeah, when I was driving it, yeah.
It's also been like this
for the last few days, and it's going to last, I think, till 7:30, right?
It's about another hour and a half left for you to take a look at the lunar eclipse. It's a partial eclipse, right? So I think at its maximum point, the moon is going to be about three quarters in shadow. So that'll be really cool.
Yeah, it is. I wonder whether it'll bring out all the crazies in KL.
everyone goes a little bit moon mad. All right, but in the meantime, if you are not able to take a look at the eclipse, you can listen to us because we'll be bringing you lots of fascinating discussions this morning. What are we going to be talking about?
Exactly? Oh, you can do both. You can look at the eclipse and listen to us on our app, on the BFM app.
Absolutely.
I'm sure that would be very, very satisfying. We're going to talk about the political divide, which has been more and more gaping over the last few years between the left and the right, no less contributed by populism. And we look at a Harvard Business Review article that asks whether teams are going to be more effective with diverse team members, politically diverse team members.
And I'm going to be talking about maths and science, whether it should be taught in English and whether you think it would make a difference. I did. It did for me anyway. And also question whether we can afford to ignore the fact that most of these developments in this field are in English, by the way.
So if you want to weigh in on those conversations, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. First up, we're going to be talking about what sets apart the big winners from the rest of the pack. So be sure to stay tuned for that. And here's I'm Happy to Just Dance With You by The Beatles, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was A Change Is Gonna Come by Sam Cooke, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Julian and Xiaoning. Now everyone wants to be a winner, right? And in the business world, Warren Buffett is the name that people cite when we talk about success. There is a reason he's called the Oracle of Omaha. And so he has talked about the traits he looks for when he hires people. So the things that he sees sets apart the winners from the rest of the pack. So it boils down to integrity, intelligence, energy. And I guess it made me curious as to what kind of things do you think would be important when you are looking to hire someone, say for a job?
At the very risk of going against what Warren Buffett is saying, I'm going to try to be a little bit too smart on this, which is that we live in a very structural world where there are structural issues stopping a lot of people from having that upward social mobility, right? So really it boils down to what makes you happy. You are going to be driven to what makes you happy, and what makes you happy is a result of your background. Of course, Warren Buffett is putting the human context in a very competitive capitalistic world, which does not work all the time for people. I mean, this kind of advice, if you give it to a person from a poor background, it's not going to work on that person because the ceiling on social mobility would just stop that person.
Wow, that was so deep, man, Julian.
That's why I said I'm going to be a little bit too smart.
At 6:09 in the morning.
I'm going to lose out in that game, right, that Warren Buffett recommends.
So are you basically saying that you can't be a nice guy if you really want to break the
glass ceiling? I'm saying that what Warren Buffett says doesn't matter. It's not going to make people, the average person anyway in the world, more successful. It's only going to make people who are already there at a certain background, social background, giving them that edge, but not everyone in general, I think. It's along the lines of Jack Ma as well, saying things that like, if you're not a billionaire by 35, you're a failure. But not everyone can be a billionaire, because if everyone is, then there'll be no billionaires, right?
I mean, putting aside Jack Ma's billionaire by 35, I don't necessarily think that these traits put forward by Warren Buffett are incompatible with essentially giving people that step, you know, that in order to achieve achieve that social mobility when otherwise they wouldn't be able to? Because this was a talk at a university, right? And Warren Buffett essentially put forward a scenario to his listeners. He basically said, imagine you could choose one of your classmates to give an extra 10% salary to. And he said, you know, when you look at this, when you decide who you're going to give that extra 10% to, you're not going to decide based on who has the best grades, who has the richest family. At the end of the day, most people will choose those with leadership qualities, with people who can perhaps convince people who are, I guess, smart about it and then can convince others to do the work for them, maybe.
And motivate them to do the work for them.
I think he means well, and I don't disagree with him. And he's also making bets like on humans in a good way, like he does on stocks, right? What quality of human beings mm-hmm. would you bet on, would you put your money on if you're going to give him
that chance? Yeah, he is a long-term value investor, right?
In that hypothetical situation. But he's also a man who puts his money where his mouth is because of the fact that he believes that the world kind of needs change. He gives all his money away, right? Almost all to causes, right?
So, and he's not the only one. Like the Bill Gates Foundation is another similar example.
My point is that this is with regards to a small part of somebody's life, which is their work life, and to get that extra nudge to the top, right?
I think what you say is partially true, Julian. I mean, at the end of the day, if you want to get into that job in the first place, yes, these traits probably come in useful maybe after. But when you are trying to apply for that job or when you're sending in your CV, people wouldn't know all these things about you so easily, right? So it does come down to where you studied, what you did, you know, and maybe luck. Honestly, sometimes it's luck. But I do think when you're in that job, if you have the following features, you know, you basically you're a person of integrity, you are honest, you're trustworthy. I don't think that those are necessary. Those are things that probably will tide you over and maybe help you climb that corporate ladder. Initially, maybe you think I'm left behind because I'm Mr. Nice Guy. You know, people step on me. But in the long run, I think these values do show up.
I'm not saying it doesn't. I'm just saying that for the average person, I mean, the world is still a very unequal place, right? For the average person in the world, this advice wouldn't apply. This advice would apply for people who already have that leg up in life.
I think this advice applies to everybody because these are not bad traits anyone should have in the first place.
I think maybe
they're not as commonly practiced as we would like to see. Like, for example,
they're not
how,
verbalized. I mean, you don't go for a leadership course and they tell you, fulfill your promises, be honest, be trustworthy. I've never heard that in the leadership.
How many people in the world can be leaders? I mean, the leaders is a draw of the luck, right? Not everybody can be a leader.
Not everyone has a character to be a leader.
So this is really about playing that game, right? That game of chance. And if you want to raise your chances of becoming a leader, then you listen to somebody like Warren Buffett or read the Harvard Business Review because you want to be up there to strive to become the boss. But, you know, that's a game of lottery, a game of chance, in my opinion. And I don't think that this advice actually helps the world.
All right. Well, I do think that at the end of the day, people should be practicing, you know, this integrity, intelligence, fulfilling their promises, essentially valuing good hard work. And perhaps if people talk about it more, then people will come to value them more too. Well, let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. What are the traits of a good leader for you? Do let us know. We've got a couple of messages and then more fascinating discussions for you. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Julian Ng and Wang Xiaoning, and that was Nobody by Mitski. Now, we're always saying that we should get different opinions on issues because they create well-rounded arguments, right? Well, this article in the Harvard Business Review shows one team's attempt to conduct empirical research into the subject using Wikipedia. Now, they found that editing pages, because Wikipedia is open to crowd editing, they found that editing pages about controversial controversial topics, whether in politics, social sciences, or the sciences, they found that politically diverse teams actually put out far better quality articles than teams that were of a similar political alignment, whether they tended towards a bias, a neutral, or a moderate political view. And so I thought this is quite interesting because of some of the insights that they managed to gain into this. Like, for example, they said that one of the notable things is that bias or political bias can sometimes be driven by passion. Now, bias is obviously not a good thing, but when you are able to communicate that bias and to discuss issues surrounding it in a civil manner, you can actually put forward a very interesting and broad view of a subject.
Firstly, I must say that I love the Wikipedia model because in spite of its success, it has never turned commercial. It always asks for donation. I think that's great. And these rules, I mean, these rules to encourage discussion and discourse are just amazing. And I truly believe that this actually surfaces, you know, the best of this very polarized world because you don't step over one another in this. It's so important to be critical, I think, and not to be stuck in our own echo chambers. And this coming from a man who had beginnings in the adult entertainment industry, right? And then he started Wikipedia, possibly with links to freedom of speech as well.
Yeah, I like the whole concept of it where it's very community-based, right? Because you have a chance to have your own view. And it forces us, I mean, if you work in teams, to compromise. I mean, if you're just biased as an individual, fine, okay, you know. But when you're forced to communicate and contribute to this article in Wikipedia, you know, in a way, it teaches us how to sit down and work together as a team rather than just forcing our way through, right?
Yeah.
And that model is fantastic if you could just work in offices all the time. But implementing it would be the challenge, I think.
But this seems like the crucible, you know, where you actually put everything to the test. So the very idea of what it means to work in a team, I don't think that the article suggests that you play nice with each other.
You really
go out there and you know, get at each other to come up with the final
best
ideas.
Yes, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Because the idea here is that you are united by a common purpose, right? And the purpose here is that these people want a voice. They want to be able to put forward their ideas and the information that they have to the public. And Wikipedia is the perfect platform for this because essentially it's an encyclopedic monopoly. Everyone uses Wikipedia, and a lot of people, even though, you know, academics will say that that Wikipedia is not a credible source, everyone uses Wikipedia in their day-to-day lives.
It's a good way to start something, to start research on something else, right? It gives you a basic platform, like a 101 on something that you want to find out with. But I think about the bias part is that when we have bias, that comes with a certain amount of passion, right? We really believe in something. And sometimes you need to drive that passion. You can use that bias, the positive side of bias, to your benefit when you work. It's not always going to be bad that you have a particular leaning in one way or another. But I guess it's just channeling it into a good piece of work.
And being able to have that conversation with your teammates and being able to question the foundations of your beliefs. Because one of the things this team analysed was that purchase of science books between people who swung further to the left and people who swung further to the right. And they found that in terms of science books that they were reading, they weren't even reading the same kinds of information. So when you don't even have that uniting factor of the same facts, how do you even start that conversation? So you really do have to question that foundation in order to come to some sort of compromise. So it basically forces people out of their echo chambers, which I think is great. And I am fully aware of the irony of talking about echo chambers when we are here on BFM.
Yes. Are we stuck in an echo chamber or should we fight with each other more?
We did. We had a bit of a tiff over leadership this morning and whether it works, right?
So leadership is a game of lottery. I'm going to start a wiki entry on that.
Absolutely.
No, but I think at the end of the day, right, if you think about it, academic study is similar to this, right, where you're supposed to, you're encouraged to read views of different opinions and then maybe come to your own conclusion, but not be so stuck in just one train of thought all the time. So bias, you know, and that can be extended to working in a team. I mean, like in our case, right, for the Morning Run team, we all come from different backgrounds. We all have different academic backgrounds too, and also political views. And I think that makes for a richer working environment and also a better conversation every day.
But you know what? Let us know what you think. Would a politically diverse team make for better work? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're coming up on the 6:30 news, and very appropriately, here is Don't Go Away by Oasis, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Any Way You Want It by Journey, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Julian Ng and Wang Xiaoning. Now, the National Education Advisory Council is currently weighing reintroducing teaching of science and maths in English. And this PBSMI, it was introduced in 2003, phased out again in 2012, and when maths and science were once again taught in Malay. And the Prime Minister, Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, has called for people to put aside nationalist pride for fear that those who fail to do so or to learn science and maths in English might be left behind at the end of the day.
Yeah, I wouldn't dispute with this and certainly agree that this is very important. But I wonder how countries like Indonesia, China and India would do it. I mean, India would be more comfortable because they are very comfortable in English and they have a very large tech-based students and population. But China, I guess they go to university later on in the US, to Harvard and Princeton and Yale and learn tech, right? But do they force science and maths and English in the schools?
No, but for India, I do know that English is the medium of instruction in universities, especially for maths and science. It already is, right?
I mean, India has like thousands of languages there, right? So they need to fall back on English.
And they always had, I mean, at the end of the day, they're a bit like us. They were an ex-British colony, so English is widely spoken. But what is interesting, if you go to India, I notice, is that it doesn't stop people from rambling off in your native tongue. But they revert back to English when it's like business or, you know, in how when they deal with maths and science, it's automatically in English. So it doesn't mean that just because you teach maths and science in English, you stop using your own native language. Not at all.
Yeah.
You actually become, if you ask me, you have a dual fluency almost, which is to me a plus, right? It can only be a good thing.
Yeah, for me, it's a must to teach science and maths in English. In English, personally speaking, because at the end of the day, on a global stage, when you talk about the cutting edge of science and mathematical advancements and discoveries, these are all conducted in English, and you need to at least have that ability to go forward and actually engage with people in that language. And it is very difficult to switch from one language to another when it comes to a very specific subjects like science and maths, because I was in the generation that actually underwent this transition initially. And prior to 2003, I was actually in a school that taught science and mathematics in both languages. So I had double maths subjects and double science subjects. So in order to make that transition easier at the end of the day, so this was my parents' insistence that I had to be taught science and math in English. When the change actually did come about and science and maths was taught in English, I had a much easier time of it than a lot of my classmates who had to take EST subjects, so English and Science and Technology, in order to help them ease across that transition. And of course, a year after they phased out EST, they reintroduced science and maths in Malay. So for me, actually, the most damaging thing is this flip-flopping of policy, because you have entire generations of school children who will be taught in different languages, and they will be at different levels by the time they go to university. So it's going to be difficult for them to adapt.
Yeah, I wonder if this is an argument for bilingualism or multilingualism rather than the adamant policy to teach math and science in English. For example, I mean, just for a moment, taking the side of the Malay language purists who don't want this to happen, can the Malay language be developed in such a way where it can handle math and English? And of course, there's a practical problem with that, because it will take a long time, and we've been decades since Dewan Bahasa was established, like many, many years ago after independence, right, to develop the Malay language. So again, is this a question of, expanding the language to take care of subjects like maths and science, Do they do it in, for example, France or the Latin American countries or Russia? You know, how do they evolve their language to take care of these subjects?
Hang on, Julian. Are you saying... So maths and science currently has to be involved in order to have the vocabulary to deal with, because they're already being taught.
No, I'm the other way around. Okay. Like I'm just trying to take the other side here.
Yeah.
Trying to take their view because we're not supposed to be stuck in this echo chamber.
No, right? We just had this conversation about political diversity.
So can the national language be developed to take care of these subjects, to handle these subjects?
I'm actually not sure. I'm not sure I quite understand what you mean. But
the Malay language has many English words already, mm-hmm. right? And that itself... perhaps it's a failure of the developers of the Malay language, right? They should stick to Malay, right?
Not necessarily. I mean, language is a construct.
I don't know. I'm not a linguist. I may be speaking out of turn here, but how do the other countries... I mean, my basic question is, how do the other countries do it? How do the Koreans do it, the Russians? So they know more than one language apart from their mother tongue, and that is a good thing. Is this a practical way for us to achieve bilingualism, to teach math and science in English?
Well, for me, I think it shouldn't be a case where you try to rank one language over another, right? It's not about the superiority of English or the superiority of Malay. Is what's going to work for the Malaysian children today. And I think we can't ignore certain things, that maths and science is very English-based. We have to compete in the real world where most people, most businesses, most developments take place in English. Mm. Now, my beef about this, the greatest beef, is that we keep changing our minds. And in the midst of it, the poor teachers, if you ask me, the teachers are the ones really getting stuck left and right center. Because imagine you teach a subject, you know, and then suddenly you have to switch. Where does it go? And then the kids also keep flip-flopping. So just make a decision and stick to it. But personally, my view, I would like it being taught in English. Because I studied maths and science in English. Mm-hmm. Actually, I studied everything in English because I studied in Singapore, as most of you all know. And for sure, it when you get to university and you go to higher learning, and when that is English, there is a difference.
I studied maths and science in Malay, but I was very bad at both subjects.
Yeah, same here. I wasn't the best either. It's not my best subjects. But we have to compete globally.
We do. And actually, I studied sejarah, obviously, in Malay for five years. And then I went to university and I took it in English. And obviously, I am fluent in English, but I struggled because there were so many terms that I just didn't understand in a new language. But let us know what you think, math and science, English or Malay. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got a couple of messages coming up for you, and then we'll take a look at what you've said on social media. So be sure to stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For by U2, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Julian and Shaoning. Thank you for your messages this morning. We've received a couple of tweets and WhatsApps on the subjects we've been discussing. So we've talked about traits of a good leader, we've talked about political diversity leading to better work, and we've talked about the teaching of science and maths in English or Malay. So we've had a couple of tweets. Now, Dengar Kata, which is a very nice Twitter handle, says both and options. So he's talking about teaching of science and maths in English or Malay. He says both, and options should be given to schools in rural areas on which stream is the best.
Yeah, there'll be financial resource mm-hmm. issues with that as well.
Yeah, we also have this very interesting WhatsApp on leadership. And Yap basically says that the person must have integrity to be honest, to lead. He needs to be mindful and disciplined in his actions. And of course, this one is interesting, consistent, which I think is true, because we tend to be very inconsistent, right? And then what message are we sending out?
Mm. You're talking about our political leaders, are you?
All of us.
I think there was a tweet with that as well, the consistency. KY Ho, interesting. Teaching maths and science in BMR English does not address key needs for national achievement, which are completeness of content, teaching quality, mastering a common international language.
Yeah, I think we've had a few people weigh in on the subject of teachers, right? Because Siddiq also says on Twitter, I think you all are forgetting the resource issues. Do we have the resources, i.e. enough teachers who are able to teach maths and science and English for all the schools in the country? And I think this is an overall, it's not just the teaching of maths and science and English, it's also the teaching of English, which can sometimes be a problem, just the quality of English education that we see from teachers. Particularly, it's unfortunate, but it's, you know, particularly in rural areas where they may not have, where the teachers may not have the same support as they would in the urban communities in order to help them to teach English to their students.
Maybe it goes back to also just teaching as a profession, right? Unfortunately, over the years, it's not something that people choose to become. There should be more teachers, but it's not the case where, like in my mother's time, when people were studying, they really wanted to teach. It was such a noble profession. But you don't hear that very much anymore. You don't hear young people saying, I want to be a teacher. And I think that kind of is the result of the kind of honour that people give to teachers nowadays. It's come down so much, and we should bring back this as a noble profession.
Mm-hmm. We should pay teachers more, because we can talk about it being a noble profession until
but
until
if it doesn't pay,
time.
What's the...
Exactly. Yeah. If a teacher can't feed themselves or their families, then there's a problem.
Yeah, you can't attract the best talent, can't you?
That could be one fiscal policy. I mean, we're going to be talking about this later, right? Fiscal versus monetary policy. I mean, if you have, instead of spending a lot of money on highways, which we don't know whether would be used or not, or train lines, right? Spend billions on teachers, just hiring good teachers, right?
There will be a fantastic multiplier effect, actually, Julian. It's true.
Yeah, because they will be teaching the future members of the labour market, right? Now, Bernard Lagari also says, in regards to students particularly, instead of flip-flopping on this teaching of maths and science and English, we should just have more English language and literature classes, enhance the curriculum, foster debate clubs, movie viewings, book clubs, and let the kids learn to love the language rather than forcing it on them. And I think this would be an interesting way to, this would be recall for an almost a reform of our entire attitudes towards teaching and education.
Yes, and Eric even said, is this even a question that should be asked? Definitely yes. Most of the research papers, intellectual discussions are in English.
Victor Liu, after deciding on English, they still, this is a flip-flop issue, right? SPM, Malay Moral and Sejarah can be before one can work in government, even do housemanship for doctors and dentists.
Well, thank you very much for all your messages this morning. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.